Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by John Endres. Today we're going to be talking about South Africa's foreign policy, then we're going to talk about whether the DA should be in or out of the Government of National Unity. We're going to finish off with a discussion about the Zondo Commission. Okay, so we've seen some commentary by the ANC and by the President heralding the ANC's participation in the Liberation Movement Summit, where the President, Cyril Ramaphosa, tweeted out, "We welcome the Communist Party of China, the Polisario Front from the Sahrawi Republic, Fatah from Palestine, the FLN of Algeria, United Russia, the BNF of Botswana, and the Sandinistas of Nicaragua, and the PAC of Azania to this Liberation Movement's summit," where many great and weighty topics were discussed, such as Ramaphosa saying that Africa will never prosper if it continues to export raw materials and rely on factories far from its shores for finished goods and advanced services. At the very same time, a Citrus Growers Association of the Citrus Growers Association of Southern Africa has appealed to President Ramaphosa to intervene in the looming tariff implementation by the U.S. on our citrus exports to the U.S., which will, in a couple of days, hit them with a 30% planned tariff, which many of the citrus sellers fear may be a significant blow to the industry. And they are terrified that it will leave their crop for this year rotting in their storage boxes. So, John, it seems to me here like we have sort of the foreign policy that the ANC wants. It wants to be standing around with all these liberation movements from around the world as it identifies them, talking about great grand reshapings of the global order, whereas what it really should be doing is looking after the interests of South Africans.
Yeah, I think that there's an aspect here, Nick, which is past versus future. And you very strongly get the impression from the ANC that it's rooted in the past, stuck in the past, can't really move on. I know that a few years ago, Greg Mills and Jeffrey Herbst wrote a book called Africa's Third Liberation. And the notion here was that Africa was colonized. It liberated itself from the colonizers in the first wave of liberalization. Then you had a long period of one-party states and sort of autocratic governments, which then started breaking up around the early 1990s. And the second liberation was getting rid of the autocrats. And the third liberation was going to be economic liberation, where countries got on their own feet economically and started growing. And the feeling you get from this Liberation Movement summit is that these are the people standing in the way, not only of the third liberation, but even of the second liberation, because many of these liberation movements are still in power decades after the first wave of liberation. And in that sense, I think they are retreading really past history. They haven't got a focus on the future. They're not really engaged with how to improve the lives of people in their countries. If you look at some of the conference resolutions and the topics they found important, there was quite a lot about women's empowerment and sort of involving women more strongly in decisions, in decision-making structures and the economy, which is very worthy. But it's not really addressing the very pressing need for fast economic growth that we have here in South Africa and which many of these other countries also have. I did notice tuning into the transmission from that summit over the weekend that Fikile Mbalula thanked many of the organizations that you just mentioned as well, but he forgot about the Venezuelans. So I felt a bit put out by that because, of course, I have a relationship with Venezuela, not a friendly one with the government, but certainly a friendly one with the people of Venezuela. Nick.
It's just kind of insane to me how much the ANC cares about, and we've seen this in the news recently with MK switching its stance on this position, in particular the Polisario Front. That conflict over Western Sahara, which the Polisario Front is part of, is firstly vastly removed from our ability to influence. Secondly, it's of no real economic importance to us. And thirdly, nothing has really changed in that conflict for decades. And yet the ANC sort of still treats it as like this kind of hot topic that's like this ongoing liberation struggle. I mean, regardless of what you think of the merits of the case, it kind of seems to me like the Polisario Front has sort of lost that war pretty decisively. And yet it's sort of like this big deal for the ANC that when MK decided that it was going to switch sides in that conflict, the ANC said, ah, you see, we've caught them. They're sellouts. Which is a thing that would only make sense to someone who is really deeply inside the ANC's ideological universe. The rest of South Africa, I think, is looking inside at that going, huh? you know, we have real pressing, urgent matters here, like our tariff policy, like the fact that we had dysfunctional states, Lesotho, Swaziland, Zimbabwe, on our border. And the president just doesn't seem able to kind of respond to reality.
And I think what we're seeing in South Africa certainly is the sort of increasing disconnect between the political elite and where South Africa's people find themselves, which is one of the reasons why ANC support is declining. It is a movement that, you know, led the vast majority of South Africans, getting 70% in the elections in 2004. But now the leadership is going off in its own direction and leaving the people behind. And I think the people eventually, if we continue having free democratic elections, are going to vote differently. That's started to happen, and that will continue.
Indeed. And of course, I forgot to mention Mozambique, which continues to be a source of crises in the region. All right. Speaking of the ANC, there was this opinion piece written on I think it appeared on Politics Web by William Saunderson Mayer, which really heavily criticizes the DA for the way they've acted in the GNU. The title is John Steenhuisen's latest Ramaphosa rollover. In it, Saunderson Mayer makes this sort of case about how, you know, the DA set up this quite good strategy, he thought, on the appropriations bill, which is, I think I agree with how he kind of characterized it, that the DA was going to block the budget until such a time as Ramaphosa had to, you know, take decisive action against corrupt ministers. The DA said, we're not going to vote for those corrupt ministers' bills. And that this was a pretty good position to be in. Ramaphosa had to choose between sort of protecting his own and getting his own budget passed. Now, Ramaphosa did fire a minister, and, you know, this was hailed by the DA as a great victory. But, you know, the question is, was that price worth then voting for the budget? And I think this is the key kind of disagreement here. Saunderson Mayer seems to think that, no, this was not a real concession by Ramaphosa, and the DA didn't really win anything out of this, and that they should have held on longer. But I don't know. What do you make of this situation, John? Do you think the DA is being played, or is it holding its ground at the moment?
I think it's sort of one of the big debates at the moment in South Africa, and I certainly think that William Saunderson Mayer's position is justifiable. It's sort of, you know, one that's based on solid argument thinking about the political balance of power. I think from our perspective, we slightly differ in the sense that we think there's an innate value to the DA in lasting inside the GNU for a while, you know, unspecified, indefinite, but for a while longer. The reason we think that is that if you look at the big four parties in South African politics at the moment, the ANC is kind of on the way down. We see, you know, its membership base being eroded. We see a disconnect between the priorities of voters and what the ANC is promoting. And we see also that the ANC itself is under attack, you know, from MK, from the DA, from the Trump administration. So it's in a difficult position. And I think as things stand at the moment, it's probably going to continue going down. The EFF is severely weakened currently. I think in the latest poll, it was at 3% or thereabouts. It suffers from, you know, many of the top lieutenants of Julius Malema having departed for MK, and in a very much personality focused party like the EFF, losing that many key staff looks like weakness on the part of the leader, and that reflects in the form of weakness of the party itself. And if we look at MK, they've been doing quite well in by-elections, and we assess that they continue doing quite well. They still have probably ground to gain, but structurally, internally, they have a big problem, which is that they've got a number of factions fighting each other, basically being held together by the glue of the Zuma personality. But once that glue is gone, then what will hold that party together? So structurally, it's a party that probably will also go down after going up a little bit first. That leaves the DA, and it actually places the DA in the position of picking up a lot of the pieces that these three other parties are going to leave on the table. The reason it can pick up those pieces is because by being inside the GNU, it gains a lot of credibility and authority in the public eye. Plus, being inside the GNU also blunts a lot of the allegations of racism against the DA, because the DA can say, look, we're working with the ANC, which kept accusing us of being racist. We've not brought back apartheid. We've not even made any, attempts or signals in that direction. And why would we? Because that's a crazy notion. We're actually quite reasonable, and you can vote for us. And the longer the DA lasts inside the GNU, the more it will benefit from this increase in credibility. And that is not to dismiss William Saunderson Mayer's criticism. I think it is valid. But that is kind of the dilemma the DA finds itself in at the moment. How much ground does it cede to prolong its stay within the GNU versus how fiercely does it need to stand up to the ANC at the risk of getting kicked out? It's a tricky position to be in.
And just on that point about polling, this does seem to be paying off for the DA at the moment. So we got polling from the Social Research Foundation in June. So it's a little bit out of date. It's not keeping up to the latest. But then again, the public actually doesn't keep up with the minutiae of all of these debates as well. So it's not like I think public opinion will radically change that much unless something very, very dramatic happens. But in the latest poll from the SRF, the DA was up to about 26%, MK 18%. The ANC is still around 40, which is what they got in the election, just under 40. And the EFF, as you said, down to 3. So seems to be working for them, even though I know that a lot of core DA supporters are irritated by this because they do feel like the party is being taken advantage of. But it does seem with the sort of people who are, shall we say, DA curious, this does seem to be landing fairly well. So I don't know. I think the judgment call on exactly whether the strategy or work is working or not is actually still sort of out. I don't think we can clearly say one way or the other. But I tend to think that while I think you can quibble with individual decisions, did they, for example, vote for the budget for too low a price this time? Maybe. But I think the overall strategy at the moment is fairly sound, even though it is very frustrating to watch this kind of completely ridiculous, shambolic, not government of not unity, which is really what it is.
And I think what William Saunderson Mayer also he also makes the good point that part of the premise of the DA joining the GNU was that this government would be producing economic growth. And that is something that it
And
hasn't
that's not
done.
happening at all.
It's not happening, no. Exactly.
And I think that is an important thing to bear in mind is that, unfortunately, we're probably going to be stuck in this horrible no growth zone until maybe even 2029, which is very bad for the country's forward trajectory. So that is worth keeping in mind. Okay, let's go on to our last story. And we had unusually harsh criticism from the judiciary towards directed towards government, particularly from former Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. Who was attending, I think it was an anti-corruption summit on hosted by South African churches, and on the sidelines of which he was talking to the Sunday Times, and he really had a go at the president's appointment of ministers who he had found against in the Zondo Commission. Zondo said, it was like the president was saying, I don't care what you have found about these people. I think they're good enough to be promoted. Talking about deputy ministers being promoted to ministers, even though there were flags in the report. The recommendations that were made based on evidence that was led transparently and when the whole nation was watching, we are defending the report because we believe it was sound. But yes, I had to swear them in, remembering what I found against them, Zondo said. And he said, he also expressed some doubt about the national dialogue with the former Chief Justice saying, I don't want to say it's a bad thing, but I'm concerned about simple things that don't need a national dialogue. I'm concerned about making sure that municipalities, we have competent people that are doing their job, people who have integrity. I'm concerned about interference, even municipalities. I'm concerned about hospitals. People go to hospitals and not finding doctors and nurses and not finding medicines, those basic things. And I think it's an extremely, it's a simple point, and in some ways it's an obvious point, but it is the crux of the matter. At the same time, the president responded to this by saying, no, 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 we're committed to the full implementation of the state capture recommendations, which is just a joke. You could start with Deputy Secretary General of the ANC, Nomvula Mokonyane. There's a great place to perhaps go further investigating based on the findings of the Zondo Commission report. But no, she's giving speeches in the ANC's name. She's sitting at the NEC meetings. I don't know, John, but you know, this just speaks once again to this theme in this whole episode of how Ramaphosa seems almost kind of operating in a different dimension, frozen in ice.
Yeah, there isn't an element of delusion to a lot of the communication coming out of the presidency. And this is one good example. You know, I don't think that any ordinary South African believes the president for a moment when he says that these recommendations are being taken seriously, that action is being taken. I saw that the presidency statement also mentioned that 11 billion rand, I think, had been recovered from Zondo era, from Zuma era corruption. But if you put that in relation to the amounts that were sometimes bandied about, the total cost of corruption, a trillion rand, 1.5 trillion, so it's under 1%. So it's really not a very impressive figure. And I think that this kind of disconnect between the ANC and the voter, but also between the ANC and reality, will increasingly become a burden to the party and a limitation on its ability to regain some of the votes that it has lost. You know, it's not assessing reality correctly, and that is going to be quite expensive to it in the long run.
Exactly, and that's why I think that the ANC really, to me at the moment, does seem like an organization in terminal decline. And you may look around and say, well, you know, if the MK joins to ANC and the EFF comes back into the fold, then they'll go up above 50%. I think when you're so paralyzed by such incredible organizational, you know, just stasis and dysfunction, that unless you really hit the reset button and have a very strong leader to turn things around, it ain't going to go nowhere. You look across at MK and the EFF, which are just absolutely filled with viciousness and infighting and disorganization. I mean, it was very funny. We mentioned on the show last week, but MK ended up voting for the final appropriations bill, even though they opposed each individual part of it because they didn't know what they were doing, which does not speak to their ability to, you know, mastermind the country from behind the scenes through a puppet ANC. And it really does feel like we are once again on the threshold of a sort of turning of the page. But, you know, can the DA fill that space? I think is the big question. It's filled some of that space, but it's got a long way to go before it can properly challenge the ANC bloc.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And also, just coming in the list that you can avoid reality for quite a long time. you can pass laws to make things the way you want them to be, like localization laws and transformation laws and so on. But at some point, reality does catch up to you. Economic reality, for example, or service delivery reality, or election support reality. And then you can't run away anymore. And that point is coming for the ANC, also for the country, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, obviously, interesting threads to follow over the course of this week and over the rest of this year. But with that, we'll call it to a close. Thank you very much for watching. Hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.